If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
...love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Well, welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Hey there. Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you found us wherever you consume your podcasts. Apple, Audio Boom, or as always on the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. You can find Darren, the one and only Darren Bunch, at Golf Getaways on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at Mitch Lawrence on the same social medias. And by now, we are hoping you know you can find the newest member of the Talking Golf Getaways and Golf Newsnet team, our highly esteemed and highly decorated co-producer extraordinaire, drink, Chris McEwen, on every social media platform, at Chris McEwen, M-C-E-W-E-N. Or you can check out his great podcast, Golf Origin Stories, wherever you will consume your podcasts. As I said before, I love the idea of consuming them. I have this image up. Anyway, we have
it
a great
very
show.
Tasty.
Doesn't it? It's kind of somebody sitting there just going in your ears the way a great meal goes in your mouth. Okay. This wasn't the way I wanted to start the show, but there you go. Speaking of shows, Darren, what a treat this is going to be for you and I and Chris and the listeners, because this is actually historic in nature. You and I, after 164 prior Talking Golf Getaways episodes, will be connecting with our guest from the lovely, idyllic island of St. Lucia in the Caribbean. First time ever.
I haven't been to St. Lucia yet, but this is going to be exciting. And I have to tell you, Keith has lived in some of my favorite places on the planet. Cape Breton Island while working on Cabot Cliffs, the island of Tasmania while building Lost Farm. So I'm looking forward to chatting with him about a bit about those great spots as well, which those two spots couldn't be any different, Mitch.
And since Darren mentioned Keith, and I have not yet mentioned who our guest was, I was going to kind of leave that to you, Darren.
I thought you already were supposed to have done that.
We have the great Keith Reb with us, and you will learn about Keith and his amazing career and the work he's doing now on St. Lucia and a whole lot more. I have an intro that's going to give you all that. It's actually, we're calling it now the Mitch-tro. That is the official name of the introductions. Let's talk about this just for a second. We are all obviously lucky enough to play a game that varies every course we set foot on. Each one is distinct. Each one has its own character. Classics in Scotland and Ireland, modern layouts today. Every course has a history of its own creation. And you name, I was thinking about this, you name me another sport whose playing field is tied in the public's mind to whoever designed it. Yankee Stadium, Roland Garros, Lambeau Field. Wembley, do you have any designers? Somebody came up with those plans, but you don't know who it is. I am betting no name jumps out, but golf. Same exercise. Mention St. Andrews, Prestwick. Other than the big shaper in the sky, we think old Tom Morris had a hand on it. TPC Stadium course, Pete Dye. Augusta, Cypress Point, Royal Melbourne, the good Dr. McKenzie. You get the idea. In most well-known golf course endeavors, though, it's almost always the big names that jump out, and rightfully so. They're the first on people's minds. But beneath every great success, without exception, there are countless others who contribute to that success. Our guest today is one of these most talented, yet often unheralded, which we are attempting to change, co-creators, whose creative work has gone into some of the most famous courses in our game today. Here are some of the courses, among others, that have a Keith Reb stamp and shape on them to varying degrees. Working with Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw, Cabot Cliffs, Kapalua's Plantation Course, Stream Song Red, Bandon's Sheep Ranch, Ozark National, Barn Boogle Lost Farm, that Darren mentioned, the highly anticipated course, which we'll be talking about, where we connect with Keith today, Cabot, St. Lucia in the Caribbean. And on a side and no less important note, as far as I'm concerned, he's put two fabulous courses of his own co-creation with Riley Johns of Integrative Golf on the map. Winter Park 9 in Florida, you've heard me rave about it, and the short course at Forest Dunes in Michigan. And I know that Chris McEwen is going to want to hear about that. I can't wait to get to it. You can find Keith online at Keith Reb, R-H-E-B-B, on Twitter and Instagram, and at his website, rebgolfdesign.com. We are thrilled to have him on hand now. I have a feeling he's taking a midday break from his bulldozer at one of the most beautiful spots I have ever seen for a new golf course. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways, Keith.
Hey, it's been a long time coming to be on the podcast, and I'm so happy to be joining you guys today. And, you know, I mean, first off, I just really want to thank, you know, Mitch, you and Darren for your support and your encouragement throughout the years and just the positive feedback. And we really appreciate that. And it does mean a lot to us.
Well, you're more than welcome. All of us who play, thank you a million times more. We're happy to do it, but we get to enjoy the fruits of your labor on a scale. Well, I hope you realize it by now. I think we'll talk about that at some point during this. But before we get into the nuts and bolts and the dirt, as it were, of your career, tell us a little about the path you took to get there. You didn't start out to be involved in the golf world when you were in your hometown of Lincoln, Nebraska, right?
No, I mean, yeah, I really never thought that golf course architecture, building golf, would ever be kind of in my career path. But, you know, I was just fortunate enough to work for a contractor in Lincoln, Nebraska, building golf. And just, you know, doors just kept on opening through this time. So working for Landscapes Unlimited was, you know, I mean, I never thought that golf course architecture or even building golf would ever be in my career path. And it just throughout the years of doors being opened for me by multiple people and people giving me the opportunities, I still can't believe where I am now. I really appreciate every day that I'm here, being able to build golf and meet the people that I've met through this career path. Every day is, I'm grateful. So.
Did you play golf growing up?
No, I didn't. You know, I mean, my dad was left-handed, so I didn't really get the hand-me-down clubs. You know, I was into soccer and other sports, and it wasn't until that first job working for Landscapes where I was out there on that project at Sutton Bay and just seeing the beauty of the golf course and what they've built and being a small part of it. It was just kind of that aha moment, like, you know, this is fun. This is exciting. This is, you know, this is something that I want to keep on doing and never thought it would lead to the exciting things, you know, that the opportunities that I've had and the people that I've worked for and with.
Just to dig for a second deeper, was Landscapes Unlimited, were they strictly working with golf projects?
Yeah, I mean, they still are one of the largest golf course development companies in the country. I mean, they build golf courses all over the world. So they would be, you know, basically supporting architects, or they might be building their own stuff as like a design kind of build with their own designer and shapers and things like that. So, yeah, that's how I got started with them. So,
Keith, when you started playing the game, were you like most of us, where it hooked you right away, or did it, did it take you some time? You know, even though you could see the excitement of the project that you were working on, did it take you some time to really embrace the game, or was it just like the first time you swung, you were like, oh yeah, this is something I want to do for fun for, you know, the rest of my life?
You know, I mean, to be honest, Darren, I think the one thing that really had the aha moment too, again, with golf, was when the second year of building Cabot Cliffs and having the opportunity to play Cabot Links with Riley and Trevor Dormer, just two great friends and colleagues, and just seeing the enjoyment and the fun and being more about the people that you play with and that enjoyment is when it was the moment where I know why people love this game and why they love playing it and why I love building it, knowing it will lead to those opportunities to friendships and memories to be built as we're building golf, if that makes sense. But it's a special game, and I have so much respect for it. And I guess it's one of those things as going on, as you're building and you're seeing people enjoy the courses that you're building or working on, or just golf in general, it's like you fall more in love with the game, and more appreciation coming from, not having, I love the game from the very beginning, and then being the driving force of, okay, I want to play golf, and then I want to build golf, and then I want to design golf. And so it's I guess to say this whole thing's been an organic journey, and the people along the way are the reasons why I love this game more and more every day. And I love building places where people can enjoy it. So.
Well, talking about Cabot Cliffs, it kind of leads me into my first question here. We want to dive into some of the parts of your job that golfers don't necessarily see until the end product. And 15, 16, and 17 at Cabot Cliffs, probably one of the most unique corners in all of golf. And when I walk those holes, like the 15 is a tumbling par five down toward the sea, 16 is the dramatic par three, 17 is one of the most fun, drivable, yet blind par fours that you'll find anywhere. I walk around that property and I can't help but wonder, not only how did these holes get envisioned by Coren Crenshaw, but more importantly, how did they get built? Because that is some extreme kind of edge of the world property right there.
To be perfectly frank on that, Cabot Cliffs today is the hardest golf course that I've ever been involved with building and construction. it was the time frame and that we had to build it in for just the weather. I mean, mm-hmm. having exposed ground with rain and the elements and trying to get those holes planted without them washing away. It felt like Mother Nature at times was working against us and sometimes. And, I remember one day we had planted 15, 16, and 17. And those holes were all hydroseeded. And the grass had just popped. I walked out there that day, and I probably made that same walk that you're talking about, is walking through there. I was so happy. It was like, okay, the grass is growing. That means that the ground is going to be stable, and we got it. We got a chance. And it was almost like a weight kind of lifted off my chest at that moment. Next day, 3 inches of rain. Start over, and it was brutal. And everybody there just, okay, well, this is what we got to do. We got to go back, and we're gonna have to fix it. We're gonna have to rehydroseed things. So there was that was a challenge of that project, where it was just the unknowns, and you can't control the weather. But what's so neat about that property is, just Bill's vision and his ability to set us up with, land to build golf on and set us up for success when we're shaping, but then also giving us opportunity to be creative and look outside the box. He allows us to be very creative. And that's something that's really, I really appreciate when I'm working for him. So.
What's it like to be on a dozer on the edge of the world like that?
Yeah, it was.
I had trouble walking on 16. Do you remember that, Darren, when we were there?
Exactly. Remember,
where that bunker is in front of the green, looking down over that cliff? Yeah. I almost passed out, Keith.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you have certain death on every corner of that green, front, back. It was when you're on equipment, there's something about where you just know, you know the piece of equipment, and you're not nervous, you know, on that piece of machinery and the ground when you're working it. But I'm sure anybody that was watching what I was doing was probably very nervous on how I was, you know, had an excavator hanging over the front of the edge of the green to build those bunkers in the front, to core them out, to get something we could work with. And that whole green was that green complex was a sinkhole.
Kidding.
It was very deep. There was just a straight hole there, and we had to fill it in and build it up and clear everything out of it, and then bring soil in and compact that just to even get it to that grade. Bill first thought that we would never get, we'd only probably get the right side of the green to where the left part of the green is now, that upper tier. Mm-hmm. And that's where he thought we'd get it. And, you know, I guess me pushing the limits, I'm like, I think we can get a little bit further. And that's how we got that little extra bottom, you know, left part of that green so far to the right there. And, that was a challenging green because when you're building a green too, on some of these places, you have opportunities to, you know, bring in the materials that you need, drainage or the sand or the, you know, anything from multiple locations to a green. This one, you only have one option. You're bringing everything from the left side of the green to the right-hand side of the, you know, and you're basically building it from the very far right of the green, and you're working your way and you're building it, you know, you're painting yourself out of the corner there. So yeah, that was a challenging one. You know, it's just, it's a really neat green. I mean, yeah, there's one story too with the superintendent that was out there. You know, we'd always get in the habit of picking up rocks that might be in the sand capping, and then we would just, you know, throw them off to the side of the hole. Well, he was doing that, and my dog Addy was out there on the green on 16, and I had my back turned. I was talking to somewhere else, and then all of a sudden I look and I'm like, "Where is Addy?" And I looked everywhere, could not see her or anything like that. Well, he had thrown a rock off the front of the green on 16 and threw one of the
over the cliff.
Over the cliff. In the front. And there's a little bit of kind of like a little bit of a, I don't know, like a little bit of a swale that kind of almost goes all the way down to the ocean. And then I all of a sudden see her running in that gap up to the green. And it's so steep that when she's running, all the gravel and everything like that, she's not moving. Like, she's just in the same place. So, yeah, the superintendent almost, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It was one of those scary moments. But, yeah, it's.
So, if you were naming that hole, you just named the whole Abbey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And it was also, I mean, you know, it was a place where when my wife was out there, we would go out and just. We would sit on that mound that was on the far left of the green and just sit and just, you know, stare out into the ocean and watch, you know, the sunset and, you know, it just enjoy, you know, whatever, everyone's hard work to where we got to that point to build that, to get that in place, to make that happen. You know, it's just.
It's such a fantastic spot. It's just an amazing place to be. Mitch and I have had that luxury too, to have been out there in the late evening, you know, just watching the sunset, shooting photos and video, and just have a great time out there. One other question I have about this build on this corner is, when Bill Kaur comes to you and says the 17th hole is going to be this crazy drivable blind par four, do you look at him and shake your head? Or are you excited to try to make that hole work? Because I mean, I think you guys pulled it off beautifully for something that in some ways could have been a disaster in the way the round plays out. And instead, it's just, to me, one of the high points of the entire golf course, which is saying something, because I think every hole at Cabot Cliffs is a work of art. So, you know, what What goes through your mind when you find out that moment that, oh, this is what we're going to build for the 17th hole?
You know, I love those challenges that Bill will kind of hand over, you know, and try to make the, you know, not trying to even think about analyzing the length or distance or what shot you'll hit into it. I mean, that's what Bill's thinking about. That's, you know, that's his job. My job is to build something neat there and make it work. And that was, you know, that was that, I mean, that tee ball, you know, is just breathtaking. You're looking down that whole coastline. I mean, it's almost hard to believe that, you know, after all those holes that you played, you're on the 17th and you have that, and you almost, you know, after the 18th and 17th, you know, you almost don't want it to finish. But
going, no doubt about that.
Yeah. I mean, 17 is, I mean, it, you know, I got asked a question, by Ben Cowandura. We were all talking, a few people were asking, you know, what do you think the hardest hole was to build out at Cabot Cliffs? You know, I had a hard time thinking about it because I, you know, each one had its challenges and things like that. But, you know, 17 was actually the most difficult one in the fact of trying to grow in and get it stabilized. And it kept on, I mean, just picture that slope going to that green. Every time you got a rain, everything ended up down at the green. Mm-hmm. So you would, you know, then you'd go back and you had to take all that sand. You have to push it all the way back, rehydrate seed. That was the, you know, and those are the ones that, you know, are more, I mean, rewarding when it's finished and you can stand out there and know if someone tries to carry the green or they hit that, you know, that little speed slot there and they end up on the green or, you know, it's just, it was a fun one, you know, very difficult, but yet rewarding.
Well, I think, you know, this kind of leads to the next question. Darren and I could talk about Cabot Cliffs for the next 6 hours. We won't do that.
6 years.
Yeah, we won't do that. But it kind of leads to the next part of this, which I think, and I'm sure Darren feels the same way, is one of the more interesting aspects to you, what you're doing and what you have done. You talked about working with Bill, and I'm sure Ben too, and it's pretty obvious that the respect that they have for you and the other people who are involved, it shows the kind of people they are, that they have, you know, they'll come up with a design and then they let you go because they can't be there with you while you're building. The respect they have for your ability to take what they want to do and make it happen, but also to work with your own instincts while you're doing it and give you the freedom to do that, to me is a great thing. And I know this whole idea of collaboration, your resume is full of it. Whether it's working with Bill and Ben, partnering with Riley, you've worked, I mean, this all-star cast of shapers, when I saw it relative to Cabot Cliffs, Dave Axlin, Rod Whitman, Andrew Littlefield, Quinn Thompson, and Trevor Dormer, who you mentioned earlier. Now, Andrew, Quinn, and Trevor, I'm not as familiar with. As I am with Dave and Rod. But it's, to me, it's so great to have this kind of, you talked about it earlier, this bond, this camaraderie with people. I don't know how rare or how common it is, but just tell us a little bit about how that works when you're working with people like that. And how does that process evolve over time? Is it different than what it was when, I mean, obviously when you started out, it might've been a little different, but the collaborative process to me is really fascinating about how you're working.
You know, I mean, working with Bill and Ben, you know, if you think about what you could do if you never feared failure and what are the things that you could build or without fearing that, you're going to mess up, make a mistake, or someone's not going to like it, or Bill and Ben are going to be upset because it wasn't what they were looking at. I go into a project and working for them, never fearing that I'm going to do something that's wrong or make a mistake. And if it is anything, they love that. It's something different that maybe they didn't think about. They embrace that, you know, those little things that they didn't expect. And it doesn't become a thing like, well, this isn't what we talked about. This isn't, you know, and they're like, okay, well, maybe this isn't, you know, maybe we try this. And it's, you know, and it's more of like a collaborative. We feel like we're a part of the design rather than, you know, kind of being kind of boxed in. And for a creative person, when you give them that, the opportunity, it's, you know, it's very rewarding. And, you know, it's just like, when I see that, it's like, why wouldn't Riley and I, you know, embrace that same type of opportunity if we're working with a shaper or other people to bring their ideas to the table, to let them do something that maybe we didn't expect, and work off of it and build onto it. And then when we're done, I mean, it's everyone feels like they're a part of the process, and it's better for that. And, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, when you first start your career, I mean, you kind of get it, when you're building, you know, first shaping, you might kind of fall in love with something you built. and, you know, because we all take pride, we put our heart into what we build. So it's always tough at the beginning to say, oh, well, maybe I didn't do this right. And you could get down on yourself and say, you know, and kind of get that kind of feeling like, but it's never that way working with Bill and Ben. It's just, you know, sometimes it's hard to even kind of think about how this has all kind of worked out with the way that working with them, but it's just a great process, and I'm very fortunate to be able to have the opportunities to take those things that I've learned from them and you know, kind of implement that same model in our own designs too. So
I was going to say, your relationship with them has taken you everywhere, it seems like. You know, that's what I mentioned at the top of the show. And we have to talk Tasmania. So Mitch, if you had something else there, throw it in there. And then I need to dive deep into Tasmania with Keith.
No, I was just going to say, what a great, you know, in whatever walk of life you're in, the ability to find mentors along the way is a key component, I think, to anybody's success. And obviously you found two great ones there. Yeah. You know, on the flip side of that coin, they've recognized your talent and your ability and your who you are as a human. And it does work both ways. I think I love hearing that. I really love hearing
it. No, I mean, it was, you know, going into, you know, when we first got Winter Park, it was probably one of my most nervous phone calls, calling Bill and saying that, you know, it looks like Winter Park's going to happen, Bill. And, you know, I might have to step away for a little while and do this project. And he said, you know, I was so nervous. I was so nervous because I don't want to disappoint Bill, you know, and he's taught me so much and been such a great mentor and a role model and all. And he just said, Keith, you know, this is exactly what we want you guys to do. You know, it's like, take what you learned, apply it, you know, we're excited for you. And that's, you know, and Bill was like, look, Keith, you always have a home with us, you know, and I'm very fortunate. I'm very appreciative of the fact that Bill and Ben give me the opportunity to pursue projects with Riley. And I still am part of the Core Crenshaw team. I still have a home here at Core Crenshaw no matter what. And I'm so grateful for that. And because, you know, what's so nice is like Riley and I will go do a project and we'll get our minds and we'll do a full dive into those projects. And then I have the opportunity to come back and work for Bill and just turn on, you know, right side, left side brain and turn on the creative side and just be creative. And you're kind of exercising both sides, you know, and it's I'm very appreciative of the fact that I can build golf for Bill and then still pursue projects outside of Core Crenshaw. So,
yeah. All right, D, Tasmania, get to it. I wish I could join this particular conversation.
The Tasmania Love Fest.
Yes.
As it is. Well, you know, if for no other reason, a few U.S. golf travelers have been out there And it's such an amazing place. Keith and I were talking a little bit about it before we started recording, about him living there. Keith, the first question I have to ask you, though, because this is the question I get the most on social media anytime I post anything that's not just a strict golf shot. So anytime I'm in the high grass or anything like that, I get people on social media who just start yelling at me, watch out for the snakes. And I want to know how many snakes you saw or did battle with when you were working on Tasmania.
So my wife is like deathly afraid of snakes.
Okay.
And when we first got there, we went for a walk, and Christy was there, and Bill was there, and we were walking Tom's course, and we got to the little devil, Tom's little devil hole, and I see the tiger snake like way ahead. I see it on the path. And I'm like, oh no, you know, she's going to run or scream or something, you know? So right when we were getting kind of close, I said, hey, Christy, you know, look at this green, you know? So as we're turning, you know, kind of as you're walking up and then you kind of make that turn to the left, and then it kind of just walked her right by the tiger snake and right onto the seventh hole on Tom's course. But, you know, it's, the only thing about the tiger snakes on Tasmania, they actually don't inject poison through their fangs. The poison's actually kind of either runs off a gland on the top of the snake. So if you get bit, you have to wait a while to see if the poison's actually going to, you know, take effect. That's right. Only on Tasmania. On the other islands, it's certain death. But on Tasmania, luckily, the tiger snakes were not, you know, but there was a funny story at the very end of the project. Someone was telling us the sound that the tiger snakes make when they're
the clicking close noise.
There's a sound or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bill and I both were like, after the whole project, we're like, he's like, Keith, have you heard that sound? I was like, yes, I've heard that sound. So I don't know how many times we were probably within, you know, 2 feet of a tiger snake in the marum grass at some point. But
yeah, I was the same way. I never saw a snake the whole time I was there. And so it was weird to me that people were like, you know, and I've said this on the podcast before. I mean, we have rattlesnakes, you know, all over the place in California. And it's not the first thing people say when somebody says you're going to California. They don't say, look out for the snakes. But yeah, for some reason, that's what I got all the time in Australia. And it wasn't until afterward, I put up a video where I was chomping through the high grass on a project that that Greg Ramsey, who was part of Barn Boogle Dunes, was looking to build at just outside of Hobart. And we're walking through the high grass, and I heard that sound the entire time, those clicking noises. And it wasn't until after I had gone home that people said, yeah, that's the sound they make. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I should have been a little more careful, I guess. But I came out of it unscathed when it came to snakes. But anyway, that's my sidebar into snakes. Let's talk about Lost Farm.
Yeah.
Something you talked about, turning on the creative side of your brain. I'm a huge proponent of building whatever golf course presents itself on a piece of land. And I think Lost Farm does that better than most places, in that they went ahead and built 20 holes. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes some people play all 20, some people only play 18, but it's such a creativity. You know, tell me a little bit about that entire process of how those extra couple of holes ended up in the overall game plan there.
Well, I mean, first to start off with just Bill's routing, you know, taking advantage of, you know, kind of mellow ground and then kind of building. And then kind of, you know, up, you know, you kind of have like a roller coaster. There's kind of ups and downs, and kind of, you know, it's not all just one big drop every time. So I think the balance of that site and what Bill routed and fully utilized the land, I think Bill does an excellent job at doing. And yeah, I mean, 20 holes, you know, Richard's like, he was just like, build them all. You know, I mean, it, you know, what it came down to is that Mike Kaiser wasn't really a fan of the 17th hole playing into the wind, uphill into the wind. And he wasn't really, you know, a big fan of that hole. And so we're like, okay. And then we found, you know, 13.5 or 13A, you know, the little par three up there. We found that hole. And then, you know, we needed a kind of a hole, a betting hole to, you know, get you back to the clubhouse there. And Richard's just like, I can't decide. Let's just build them all. And that was perfect, you know. And it was so much fun building golf for the Sattlers and for Richard, and, you know, and their story of what and the risks they took to build one golf course there, and then to be able to build the next, and then build the short course, and, you know, and the, you know, the risks and things that they took, and how it's been a family business. I have a lot of respect for what they've done there. And I'm just excited for the success that they've had over the years. And it was really cool that Riley got to go out and work out there on Barnboogle Run to kind of experience, you know, what it was like that working out there and working for Richard and just being able to be on that island. So
I want to say too, Lost Farm might be certainly one of the best clubhouse locations on any golf course I've ever been, if you're a person who likes to shoot photography, because you're up perched up there and you can really get a look at the design and the architecture of all these holes surrounding it, plus the just amazing views of the, you know, the ocean and the sunsets and that type of thing. But there's almost not a day goes by I don't remember being up in that clubhouse shooting photos at sunset and just really being able to see the work you guys did there and how it just lays out across that landscape so well.
Yeah, it is a spectacular sight. Again, it goes to Richard's vision, you know, I mean, to take the risk to build something like that on that land and to build the clubhouse is just really, really neat what they did there. And that, I mean, the whole process of building Lost Farm was so much fun because I was working with Dave Axelin, a really good friend and a mentor. And it was like going to work with your best friend. You know, it's like working with Riley. You're working with your best friend. You're out there building golf. You're being creative. And, you know, there'd be times that one of us would maybe get stuck on something we were building. And then, you know, one of us would go work on there, you know, and it wasn't like, this is my dirt, you know, stay off of it. You go over there and you do your thing. I'll do my thing. It was just more of a kind of each of us kind of being able to put like almost, you know, new brush strokes on each other's work, you know? So it was a lot of fun. My wife moved down there with me. And so that was a lot of fun to experience the whole island. And
you lived there for almost 2 years. Is that what you said?
Yeah. I think almost 2 years. Yeah. So if anyone gets the opportunity to go to Tasmania, just spend extra time, go golf and enjoy that part. It'll be blown away with what Barnboogle, with what Tom did there and with the new short course, but just take time to experience the wine, the wineries.
Okay. I have to.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's my dream job, Mitch. Yeah. I'm going to go live for 2 years in Tasmania.
Yeah. So many things outside of, you know, just the golf, but, you know, the golf has created an opportunity there on Tasmania where people will fly in, and it's not just the jobs that are created for just that golf course, but it's the upstream and downstream of people driving to the golf course and away from the golf course. I mean, I've talked to many of the wineries and the guys that run those places, and they're just like, you know, this has been amazing for our business that, you know, people are coming here and they're stopping here. So it's nice to see when you build a project and why, you know, it's been so much fun on these projects working for Mike Kaiser and everyone involved in those projects is that you're building golf in places that are remote, but it's also, you're bringing a new opportunity, a new job to a very remote place. And a lot of the people that were helping us with the construction on some of these projects are, you know, I'd have to travel to another country, or I have to travel to the mainland, or I have to go work in the oil field, you know, but now I can work here and I have an opportunity to stay here and be at home, and I can stay put. And I helped build it, and I'm still here either maintaining it or working on it. That's what's so neat about it. You're building golf, but you're also building a new opportunity for other people to have, you know, jobs in an area that might not have had them before. So
what a great way to look at it. I mean, I really hadn't thought about that part of it, but it makes sense. Let's move on if we can. Darren, I'm really sorry we have to leave Tasmania now. We already know about Winter Park Nine. You had mentioned it, and about Bill giving you his papal blessing to go build Winter Park Nine with Riley. Obviously, it's gotten such an incredible reception. I know the first time I went down there and got to play it, I was totally blown away by it and the concept of it. We've already talked on this show a lot about Winter Park Nine. But I want to touch on another course you did with Riley Johns, and obviously the short course at Forest Dunes. Chris, hold on to your hat. We're going to be talking about Forest Dunes land. I was lucky enough, as you may remember, Keith, to say hi to you and Riley up there when it was still, in dirt form. It had been shaped. And the three of us were standing out there. And my biggest takeaway from that, while I was talking to you and you were explaining to me about some of the holes and what your plans had been and to see them come together, was the kind of excitement and the passion in your voice about the fun of what you were building on this 10-hole par 3 course at the highest spot on the property, all the elements that were going into this particular spot. It really blew me away. I don't get a chance to do it that often in the process of a build and a shape. And I have to say, walking out there and being in the dirt with the both of you was a whole different and eye-opening kind of experience. We haven't gotten to see a lot yet because of when it was finished and everything that's happened, but I'm hoping this spring and summer that people who go to Forest Dunes and go to Michigan are going to get a chance to really blow this place up, which I think it will. To me, there's no way this isn't going to be a huge hit. How, compared to what it was when I saw you in the dirt shaping, doing that part of it, and where it is now and how it came in. How do you feel about the finished product, about the initial reaction to it? It's got to be, again, with all the projects you do, it has to be, you know, your baby. You and Riley had a beautiful baby, and it's named the short course.
So I think the best way to sum this up was a phone call I got from Lou Thompson. And Lou called me up and he said, Keith, he said, I have never seen the energy like it is right now at Forest Dunes. I said, you can hear guys hooting and hollering up the short course. He said, this has transformed the energy of this whole place. He's like, I've never seen this. And just his excitement of seeing something like that was like, okay, you know, when it has that type of reaction, you hit the right tune. I mean, Lou was such a great owner to work for. I mean, the trust that he gave us, he said, you guys go, I don't need to know how many golf holes it is. You guys just, here's everything that you need to do to build it. And you guys go and do it. And he trusted us and let us be creative and he gave us that opportunity to do a new build, and it was so much fun working for Lou. Kind of like recent news, you know, and exciting news, Rich Mack and Tom Sutterborg, you know, Rich Mack, you know, blazed the force to get Stream Song to where it is to be there. and they have now taken ownership of Forest Dunes, and I'm very excited for their you know, them being involved with there, and it's in good hands, and it's gonna be good. And
are there any plans for anything of surprise in that announcement you just made?
I think there's a name. There's a name for the short course. It's coming, guys. So it's going to be there. So we're going to get that. You know, you're going to hear about that. I can just tell that, you know, that Rich Mack is very excited. I've talked to him numerous times. For him to see me 10 years ago or more starting Stream Song on the first golf hole that we started shaping on 10 green on the red course. And then to go full circle that, you know, now he's an owner of a course that Riley and I designed. It's just kind of like, you never would have thought that would be the case 10 years ago.
Right.
And just, so it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of a exciting for I think both of us. And, kind of going back to, you know, building Forest Dunes short course and the difference, you know, I mean, it was very fun because we were really given, you know, the ability to do whatever we wanted in that a little bit of a box there in that 15 acre area. And we had Joe Hancock, a guy that's worked with Mike DeVries, worked with David McKay, you know, a great guy. And he was out there helping us. So just that fun collaboration, enjoyment, but it kind of had that more relaxation a little bit versus being at Winter Park, being the first project, working for a city, never knowing, you know, if what was kind of coming down the avenue or things like that. But at Forest Dunes, we just had the full, you know, ability to do what we do best and build fun and creative golf and push the limits and try something different and just be as creative as we possibly can. So,
well, Darren, I'll let you go. I just wanted to follow up with this. I have to say that just seeing the basic shapes of the places I was at the short course and what you were talking about how to play and the chances and the fun people were going to have and the location of it. It's, to me, it was a connector. You know, you've got Forest Dunes and the Great Weisskopf course, and then you've got the Loop. And this was the connector between the two. The entire project up there, and again, it's a remote location. Roscommon is not, you know, it's not around the corner. once you drive in and the lodging that's available now, we stayed in an unbelievably great house rental kind of place.
Yep.
And those two courses and the short course and whatever plans, which I'm sure there will be more, to me, it truly is one of the great destinations I've been to anywhere.
I think when we were building that, we really want to give everyone the opportunity to be creative in their golf play as much as we were able to be creative building it. You know, think outside the box, use your putter, you know, use different slopes and just be out there and be creative and have fun. You know, from what I've heard from the different messages, it's, you know, people are excited and I look forward to next year this year, of the season of play. And so it's going to be very exciting to see more people kind of have that, you know, it's a very welcoming course to be able to play for any age. And, you know, I mean, kind of going back to Winter Park, you know, that's the one thing that Riley and I, you know, appreciate the most and are excited about is when we get the messages from a father that, you know, had just taken their daughter out for the first round or son, you know, first round of golf at Winter Park and just seeing that memory being created And then knowing that we had the opportunity to build a short course at Forest Dunes that's going to have the same opportunities for families to create those memories of the first round of golf, Forest Dunes, short course, you know, here's, you know, something you'll never forget, you know, and you're giving someone an opportunity and a handshake to the game of golf that's very, very welcoming and not stressful. And there's, you know, no boundaries to it. So it's like, here, you know, top the ball, hit it, but let's have fun, you know. And that's what we like doing. We strive to just, you know, build fun golf. I mean, if we can do that, if we only built short courses that can give people more of opportunity to enter into the game, I mean, we'd be happy with that. So
that's such a great way to look at it. And, you know, before we dive into St. Lucia here, I have kind of an existential question that is along those lines. It's one of the things we ask sometimes in our Emergency 9 golf travel quiz, which hopefully we'll have you back for some point to do that. But my question has multiple parts here. What makes a golf course fun, and what makes a golf course great? And are those two the same thing? I didn't mean to stump you.
Yeah, you stumped me. Well, I mean, it really is if you can tell on a course if the guys that were building it and the people that were all there were having fun building it. It gets into the DNA of the golf course. You can tell by the details. It won't be rushed, and there's a sense of that. There's something a little bit extra. Sometimes maybe people won't really notice it until maybe later on when they see another course or play another course. But I think that's the one thing. It's the enjoyment that people have building it, and I think that really gets into the DNA of the golf course. That explains your question.
That's such a good answer.
How cool. All right, let's move on to where you were actually talking to us from, St. Lucia, in the Caribbean. Really, really did a little research into it. Seems like a fascinating island, a ton of history, as so many of those islands in the Caribbean have. We've already talked about collaboration. We talked about Cabot Links. You know, Mike Kaiser, Ben Cowan Dewar, principal investors, the people you got to work with there. And so this now comes down to Cabot St. Lucia. And I was reading an article, I went back, and one of the amazing things about this pandemic time is how it seems to have flown by, because I think all of us remember a year ago and thinking, okay, we don't know about this. We don't know how long it'll last. It was bad, but nobody really thought it was going to be, you know, a year later. And I was reading this article from March of 2020. You were starting on the course, got shut down, and now it's a year later. Obviously, things haven't changed much relative to the pandemic, if at all. And I know there's worse spots to be hanging out. There have to be worse spots hanging out. But talk to us kind of briefly about this year that you've had and the ups and the downs, the decisions you made to stay, to stick around, how you've gotten through it, those kind of things.
Well, you know, I remember that first in March where, you know, this guy, the superintendent that was running it or from the construction side, kind of drove up to us and said, look, we just got a message, you know, the U.S. government saying, you know, if you're abroad, head back home, you know, head back, you know, you know, we don't know how long this is going to last, but, you know, get home. And, you know, Dave Axon and I were both there, and, you know, and Dave and I both talked, and I said, Dave, I said, I'll stick it out. You know, I'm going to stay put here. And, you know, either one of us could have, you know, Dave would have stayed if I said the other, if, you know, I decided to stay, just knowing that to hopefully keep things going. If it was just unknown, really unknown. I mean, I remember that Saturday was the last day that we were able to work. And I remember looking over and I saw the last plane fly over St. Lucia. And, And I was like, okay, you know, here we go, you know. And then it was that Monday is when they, you know, basically shut everything down and scaled down. And then at one point we were basically told to stay in our houses. We couldn't even leave, you know, grocery store or anything like that. So that became a challenge. And then it was, it just kept on going. And, you know, and then my wife and I would joke about, you know, I'll see you at Christmas, you know, and the time that went on. And
so Christine wasn't there at all.
Yeah. Christy wasn't here at all. So it was 265 days that I had was not from when I saw her to the last, you know, to get home. But
wow,
it was never a regret that anything like that. There was no, you know, my wife is the biggest supporter of what I do and is understanding. And I, you know, I could not do this without her support and understanding. And, you know, she took on everything from the house, taking care of everything there and the dogs and everything. And it was just, it was never a feeling of like, oh, well, you made a mistake. Why aren't you home? It was like, we both were just like, look, I mean, this is where we're at and there's nothing we're going to do to change this. The whole world is dealing with the same thing, this thing. And what are we going to do? We're going to put energy into, you know, worry and things like that. And it was just go forward. And, that's, you know, there's a lot of people out there right now that, you know, are truly struggling and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's, and I appreciate the fortunate to keep busy and still work and be here. I have nothing to complain about when it comes to anything of being away from home or anything like that. There's so many people out there in the front lines of this everyday violence that, you know.
No, of course. I think we all agree with that part of it, Keith. It's great to hear that attitude, though, because it is great, but it's also had to be tough. There must have been times, you know, not being able to see Christy and dogs. Come on.
I mean, it was early at that. It was the early in this whole pandemic. And Christy one day called me and she's like, I don't feel good. I have not felt like this. And she was telling me I got a fever. And I mean, she called her doctor. The doctor said, don't go to the hospital. You're healthy. You're, you know, just quarantined for the 14 days. And she works from home, so she's able to stay put. And she had COVID. And at that point, there was no way for me to get home. and that's just those moments of like, you know, it is. I mean, it is a, you know, that was a big worry because at that point we didn't know what this would lead to, you know, with the unknowns of it. So yeah, it's just, you know, little things like that. You know, those little close calls. So it's, you know, and also just going to the whole ownership with Ben Kalandor and everybody. I mean, they didn't miss a beat. They're like, let's go, let's keep on going, let's build this. And just basically when they gave me the opportunity to get back on the site and work, I got on the D6 and I just went to work. I was almost the only person out. I was basically the only person out there with a dozer for a month. And, you know, a lot of these golf holes out here, you know, they take some work and they took some work, but at that time that we had through last year to refine and work on these golf holes it's completely, you know, it was a blessing. And I mean, I don't know how you can say that in a way, and I almost apologize for even saying it that way, but to take the time to kind of slow down, refine and work on it, I think it's going to make a difference in this project 100%. Bill was just here less than a month ago and the work that we've done to refine a couple of these holes, you know, I'm not even going to say the names because I don't even want to give it away what holes we've worked so hard on, because I don't think when you're out here, I don't think you'll know. And that's one thing with all the people that we have out here helping us. It's a true testament to their work and their help to work on these golf holes to where, you know, on a lot of these courses, you won't know where we started and where we finished and how much work we actually did. You'll think that they've always been that way when we're done. And that's exciting. So
what, during the course of this year, the work has pretty much gone on. You said you were shut down for a month. Was that complete? Nothing, no work, can't go out of your house, get on the dozer.
Yeah, there was a time there where everything was just still shut down. And then they let us back into it. And then we slowly started bringing on more local help. And again, that's one thing too. I mean, through this pandemic and for Ben Cowandor and the whole St. Lucia team to say, we're going forward, you know, we're creating jobs and bringing in opportunity when other, you know, the whole island depends on tourism and the tourism shut down. But how much of these guys appreciate being able to have work and learn something new. It's, you know, I see the smiles of the guys out there working with us every day that, you know, I look forward to coming back here in 10 years and they'll still be here working with the maintenance crew. And that's the thing going back to, you know, these other courses, you know, it's so nice when you go back and you see familiar faces with the guys that you worked with and they built it. They have ownership. They have, you know, that ownership and pride, and they take that into the maintenance side of it. So you always have someone there that's, you know, they're going to protect it and they have respect for what you built. And then it's neat, but it's, you know, the operators that we have, St. Lucian operators that are here, that are so talented guys that have probably built roads, built so many things. And then we're like, why don't you build this bunker, you know, or why don't you cut this out or do something different? I'll be back, you know, just have fun, build something and just giving them the opportunity to do something that they've never played golf and had a club in their hand, but now they're building golf. They're, you know, and by the end of this project, I would recommend these guys to anyone, either if they're building golf back on this island on St. Lucia or anywhere in the Caribbean. So it's really neat, you know, like how Bill's given us opportunity to learn from him, but then also, you know, teach others new skills and new things. And you're building an opportunity here on the island. And that's what's so nice. So these guys are, you know, there's smiles on everyone's face out there working. And it's a really, really, I guess that's one thing that's been really rewarding on this project, is just seeing that. You know, it's growth. There's actually something. And then when we're all out of this, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be exciting to show it off to everyone else too. So.
How great. Have you thought about if somebody from St. Lucia builds a bunker and has fun, maybe you could just put a little plaque, you know, kind of in the side of the bunker with his name on it and say, yeah. That's so cool. What a great idea in terms of ownership, like you said.
It's when you think there's things that they're going to do that you never thought of. How do you get the randomness sometimes? You give someone mm-hmm. an opportunity that's never, you know, thought about golf, isn't even thinking about building golf, but hey, here, you know, kind of here's some ideas. And then we, you know, kind of like how Bill would walk back with us. We go walk back to the tee, look at it, you know, and laugh about what they did, you know, and joke around, or then we make some edits, paint, you know, paint line or something like that, and just edit. But that's just rewarding, because I know that it's just nice being able to hand that, you know, experience that other people have given us the opportunity, but give that to someone else and them to be excited. And, you know, I mean, it's so much different than just building roads. You can kind of work the creative side of your brain rather than, you know, the other side. So
Let me ask you a question, I know I talked to Aaron about this. You're out there on a dozer. You said pretty much there were times you were the only person out there. What are you doing when you're building? Are you totally focused on a line in front of you? I know you have to be, and there's, you know, there's general shaping and then there's delicate nuance work. But do you have a playlist going? Do you have favorite? Who's your favorite music to listen to? This is for Chris.
Yeah, this is for Chris. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the first thing that I do is, you know, I get in the machinery. Oh, it's either a dozer or excavator or one of those. And then I, you know, put in the noise canceling headphones and then I turn on music. And I think some people will laugh, but I'm really into house music. I'm into
See, Darren laughed right away.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed the music, and I lived in Chicago for a while and really got to see a lot of the famous DJs that started, you know, kind of the footprint of house music. And it's just more the beat, the positive kind of music going in there. And then, you know, I just get in the machine. I just really almost get in kind of a little bit of a flow state where it's just, I'm not trying to think or overthink anything. I'm just almost letting, you know, your eyes and your hands and the machine kind of take over a little bit and not try to overthink it. And, you know, you look at one thing, okay, well, what happens if I cut a little of this material and then I fill over here? And you're making those kind of cuts and fills as you're going. And then you get off the machine, go step back and you take a look at it. And then you go back and edit a little bit. But there's not anything when it goes to just being creative on a site like this. You just kind of let things kind of happen and not try to overthink it. And what Bill and Ben have really worked hard on teaching us is know what you got, know when to walk away. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's, you know, and that's what, yeah, I just, you know, when you said that, you asked a question, you kind of before on Twitter, and I was like, I had to think about it because I'm like, what do I do? You know, it's just, I think it's just the years of just being in machinery and knowing what limits you can push that machinery to and almost being an extension of you.
But see, that's what's fascinating to me. If you're an artist and you have a canvas in front of you, you're holding a paintbrush or a pencil or something just in your hand. And the idea of letting go on a bulldozer to me is so incredibly great.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's a big piece of machinery. And to me, that's fascinating. And I think absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
I have to be honest, and there are days and actually probably this whole career of working for Bill and Ben, it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
It's just having fun. You know, there's ups and downs, but you really, those days of getting on the machinery and I look out and the ocean's there, the beautiful landscape, you know, and then it's just like, you know, even before I start the machine, it's like, it's like a moment of just like gratefulness, you know, it really is. It's just like, how'd I get here? You know, I'm a kid from Nebraska that was doing something completely different. And how has this happened?
Don't think about that one too long, Keith.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just knowing that, and then it goes to kind of that whole thing. It just, again, just gratefulness of all those people. And I can kind of almost go back and picture those moments and those people that have trusted us and given us the opportunities. And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's just when you're given such an opportunity like this to do something and work and be creative and build something, you just want to do your best because that's how I guess I'm trying to show my gratefulness of trying to, you know, if it becomes feeling like work and it's not fun, it's a day that I would need to walk away from what I'm doing.
Right.
And I hope that never happens. And with working with people like Riley and Bill and Ben and all the other people, just the energy that you get from those people and the motivation, that's what fuels, you know, me, you know, going through and being away from home and all those things that go with the challenges that, you know, it's all worth it. So.
All right. Before we get to the actual course here at St. Lucia,
I know,
Chris,
I know what you're going to do here.
Chris, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah.
Chris. Okay. Now, Keith, I hope you're aware of Chris's great podcast, Golf Origin Stories.
I have heard. Yep.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And one of the reasons that we love it is because Chris is our music guru. He is a big part, especially the openings of his show. He teaches you about music. I have become a Pearl Jam fan, and I was never into Pearl Jam before, ever. But once you said Chicago, because that's where Chris is now, and house music, I figure you and Chris might have to have a little bit of a interaction here.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, Keith, did you listen to a lot of like B96 when you're in the city?
Oh, yeah.
A little Julian Jumpin' Perez.
There you go, Darren.
The Bad Boy Bill. I mean, that's.
Oh, those are all. I saw Bad Boy Bill live in Omaha, Nebraska. I mean, it was going to Smart Bar down there and just listening to these DJs and just watching them, you know, mix in. I mean, it's kind of like a routing, you know, you kind of have to mix you got to have your highs and your lows. You got to introduce and kind of build and there's a whole mix, you know, if you look at it as a mix versus a routing, it kind of has the same flow to things. So yeah, Chicago, oh man, it's just some of the DJs, but just seeing them, how they react with the crowd and just their craft and, you know, I mean, going back to like guys like, you know, Daft Punk, you know,
sure.
You know, they basically are behind the masks because they want it to be about the music, and then the music they put out, it's not about them, you know, and that's kind of how they, in the way that they use the history of different types of music and they mash it together and collaborate and, I don't know. I could go on, Chris.
You and I are about to hijack this podcast. Yeah. This is
going off the rails.
I was hesitant to bring it up, but then I figured, how could I not?
There's some guy who's been listening to this for an hour, waiting for us to talk about St. Lucia and that specifically about the golf course. And now all of a sudden he's screaming at his iPhone saying, they're talking about Chicago house music. That's beautiful, though. That is actually the same reason that I don't want to do video with the podcast is I want to stay behind the mask and keep it all about the golf. Yeah.
Well, and the cool thing is my wife absolutely loves house music, too. And, you know, so when I'm back home, one of the first things that we do is we go to the record store and just go through the vinyl and buy new vinyl. It might just be picking stuff out of the bargain bin and just see what happens and throw it on the record player and see what we get. You know, it's something that we enjoy. That's, you know, that's just one of my, I guess, a hobby. And
that's Keith awesome. And I just became fast friends.
Yeah. I figured that was going to happen.
Keith and Chris are going to be going to shows. It's just a whole new relationship.
We're going to be seeing pictures of Keith and Chris at some music house thing.
I mean, and everyone's going through this in different ways too with the pandemic. I mean, a lot of the DJs right now are at home. They can't go play gigs. So they're at home creating music and bringing people, you know, into the music and showing, you know, and new mixes and new music that's coming out. So everyone's, you know, fighting through this whole thing in different ways. And, you know, as long as we can keep positive and be stronger for this when we're all out and done. And I think we'll have a new appreciation for a lot of things where it's, hey, I get to, you know, go to a club or I get to go play a foursome with my buddies. And it's just going to be a great day when, you know, we make it through this and I really hope we make, you know, it through this stronger and with more appreciation. And I'm truly excited for the way the game is going right now. There's a lot of people out there, positive, great people that are doing some really neat, cool things that are going to take the game, you know, to the next level with just people entering in the game. So it's, you know, and I'm excited for Ben Cowan-Dewar and for all the people up north in Canada that are going to have new opportunities. And, you know, Ben's not stopping. He's going to keep on going. And it's going to be exciting to see him grow and create new golf courses and opportunities in Canada and all over the world. And it's just so exciting to see, you know, Michael Jr. and Chris, you know, taking the baton and running with it from their dad and creating golf and what they're going to do. There's a lot of excitement. It's a tough time now, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel on this. And there's a lot of really good people, that are trying to make, a big impact on the game. So.
Definitely. And, you know, we're all going to get on a plane and come see you, one of these days. Definitely. So not that Cabot St. Lucia needs a sales pitch to golfers. But let's do it anyway. I mean, you mentioned Ben Cowan-Dewar, just a wonderful guy. Mitch and I have got to spend some time with him. His vision for golf, and golf, the golf experience overall is just second to none. You know, tell me what people are going to expect in this golf course. You've got nines coming in from opposite directions. You know, coastline holes usually get a bunch of the press, but as with Cabot Cliffs, where I love the inland holes, you've said you're excited about the inland holes on this project. Just give us the overview of what golfers are going to find on this golf course.
That's a tough one to at least just hit right at the point. But I think it's going to be a little bit of mystery when you're first, you know, on certain parts of the project. You know, there's going to be some buildup and then you get to some of these holes and just look out. It's going to be sometimes probably hard to just focus on the golf because everything around is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the golf is going to be really good and it's stunning. And there's a few places where you're going to make a turn and it's going to conceal and reveal, you know, golf holes and areas there. There's a part of the property that I just want to stand on and just almost just get people's first reaction as they make that turn and it opens up to, you know, this stretch of golf holes, you know, and you know, it's just, it, and the inland holes are, I'm very excited for those golf holes. I would just say it's just going to be excitement. I mean, it's going to be a course that, you know, it's going to play different with different wind and stuff, but it's always hard to say what people are going to, you know, what they're looking at is kind of sometimes different than what I look at when I'm building it. But I think people are be blown away by this. I think this is going to be a great, you know, excitement and it's going to be really big for the island. And that's again, what, you know, I'm excited for is just not that you just built something special, but you built something that's going to last and you built something that's going to create the opportunities for generations. And
what does the terrain look like on the inland holes? You know, obviously we can envision and they've seen the picture of the coastal, but you know, when you get in away from the water, you know, what are you playing through? Is it trees? Is it kind of rocky? Is it, you know, is it tumultuous?
Yeah. I mean, there's elevation change and there, you know, Ben Cowan-Dewar's sister sent me messages like, are there ocean views on every golf hole? And I had to like, well, I had to go look to a few spots. And then as you look back on a few tees, so you're going to have views of the ocean on every golf hole, you know, in the landscape, the trees, the native grasses, the rolling terrain of and severe parts and then mellow parts. It's there's going to be that right balance of of the feel to this golf course. And it's rock. There's rock. There's rock everywhere.
Got it.
And it is, it, you know, parts of it break up with a ripper on the back of a dozer, and others require a little bit more of a heavy-handed approach to it. But it is, it's rocky. But it's, you know, once we break through some of these puzzle pieces on a few golf holes, it's going to be unreal. You know, the 14th hole is, you know, we're working on right now. When people hit that tee ball and they come up over the top of that hill and look into that green, they're just going to be, they're going to get goosebumps. It's going to be really neat. And, yeah, it's different. I mean, that's what's so exciting about building golf with Bill and Ben, is that you always have something a little bit different. You know, each golf course is going to have new challenges on how you approach it, how you build it. And that's one thing that's so much fun, you know, on the construction side of things, because you have to think outside the box, because you don't know what type of material you're going to be working with, what type of material you're going to cap with. Are you going to have drainage pipe? Are you going to have this or that? You know, so you really have to use, you know, your trouble, you know, to figure out how to problem solve on the fly when you're on an island like this. And yeah, it's fun figuring out how to get it to the next thing. But all the things that I've learned, you know, through working on courses like Cabot Cliffs and things like that, have set me up to work on a project like this and not have any fear and not worry. You know, there's going to be tough times here with the growing of, you know, there's going to be times you're going to get rain and things are going to wash out. You're going to have to go back, but you've seen that, you know, once it'll start growing, it's going to be fine. So there's a lot of those things that you learn through the times of that will help you through this project. So, but it's going to be a special course, and I really look forward to when people have the opportunity to come out here and play it and also contribute to the island here, because everyone here is so great and gracious and treats us like family. And it's really nice knowing that this course is coming down the pipeline and all the stuff that's with it. You know, it's going to be a great thing for the island.
Well, you know, all of it's for those of you who have stuck with us for an hour and 23 minutes, I hope you have. Keith has unbelievable pictures on Twitter and Instagram, his Facebook, and you can really, I feel like I've got such a sense of what it's like there already just from looking at the pictures. It really does look unbelievable. Let's leave St. Lucia, though I hate to. But as we wrap this up, have you thought about what's next? Do you know what's next? Are there projects that you've already kind of started considering? And if you don't want to tell us and keep it a secret, that's no good. Yeah. You have to tell us.
Yeah. I mean, for Riley and I, there are some irons in the fire that we're really excited about. You know, Riley and I are both working at Canterbury Club in Ohio, in Cleveland, and we're kind of in the final stages of the master plan with them. And that's been really exciting working with Mike Presti and their whole team and the members and the board members there. And, you know, working on a club like that that has so much history and that's what's going on. You know, Riley and I have a few things that, you know, we're working on that we're excited about. So in general, yeah, we're excited for what's down the road and just also what Bill and Ben, you know, have cooking too, you know, and working with them. So yeah, we're really excited. You know, the phone has been ringing, you know, people have been calling and yeah, it's very, yeah, we're very excited for next year's and, So yeah, positive things. Yeah.
Sounds great. Future is bright.
Yep.
Darren, any parting words for Keith?
Oh, I just can't wait for us to get out there and tee it up with them. And, I want to learn more about St. Lucia, you know, as a whole too, as a destination, not just because of the golf, just like we were talking about with exploring Tasmania. I would guess that we could have a whole podcast talking about just exploring the island. And, I want to do all that stuff. So when we go, Mitch, we need to make sure we block out, you know, more than just a couple of days to go play golf.
Well, I did, as I said, I did some research on it last night because I didn't know anything about it. I'd heard about it, but it is one of those great places. It's got a really interesting history of European influence and Carib Indians and just a lot of great stuff. And Keith, I have to say, it looks like an absolutely beautiful place to hang out for a while.
Yeah, it is. Each time I try to, I see something that's beautiful out here, and that's why I try to take a photo, because it's not that I'm trying to show or show off on that. I just want to almost bring like everyone along in some way. And that's my way of like, I don't even like posting anything writing on it or even saying where I'm at or anything like that, just to where someone can just look at that photo and maybe that just, you know, we're barraged by all these other things going on in the world. And if that can be one thing that just gives you a chance to be like, okay, that's, you know, a beautiful photo or a beautiful thing, you know, and have a little positivity. That's all I'm trying to bring it sometimes when I post those photos. I just want to bring people along, kind of what I see, and it's and share it. So.
Well, you are doing that, and I know I know Darren, Chris, all of us couldn't be more grateful. I feel like I don't know about you, Darren and Chris, but I feel like I've just spent an hour and a half with the Dalai Lama.
Wow.
It's kind of how I feel. Inspired, grateful, hopeful, excited.
Soulful.
I'm sitting here. Soulful. I'm sitting here looking at a room full of hickories and going, okay, I got to go have some fun. And Keith, we really thank you so much for taking some time and filling us in on everything. This has truly been great. Really.
Yeah. Helped. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to be on here. And, I never thought that, I'd be talking on podcasts and explaining about what I've been working on. So it's sometimes a hard thing for me to do and discuss. And because I don't really want to make it about me in that way. But if I can share what I'm doing, and that might inspire someone to, take a risk and do something, in this industry or in another thing. I mean, it's just, you just gotta get out there and sometimes it takes a risk, to get to next opportunity. And I just hope everyone out there is just being safe and looking forward and keeping positive. There's a lot of things coming out, in the golf industry that are positive, and we will all get there soon, hopefully.
Yes, so. We will. Thanks yep. again. Thanks yep. again for everything. We'll keep following along. How much, before we let you go, how much longer do you think you're going to be there? Can you see an end to the project?
That's a hard one, Mitch. It might be a year. I'm not sure. It's such a hard year to even predict. I guess that's one thing I've learned here is just, you just got to take it day by day and as things go, all work out. But, I love working here, and I love the team that we're working with here, I think we have, an opportunity, to really build something neat, I'll stay here as long as, I could see myself living here at some point. That's how much this place means to me, and wow. The people here. So
wow.
Yeah.
All right. I could see myself doing there, that too.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. It's funny. We're going to have a little community. I won't say anything to my wife yet. All right. Well, Keith, we're going to let you go. Go have a beautiful sunny afternoon. Think about us when you're out there working. And again, can't thank you enough for being with us. And I know Darren and Chris both feel the same way. So we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
And as always, we have to thank the listeners. You know, we couldn't do it without them. The listeners and without great people in the golf business like Keith. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us on iTunes, hit us on the socials at Golf Trip Experts with your questions, your comments, pretty much anything you want to say or talk about when it comes to the world of golf travel. And also don't forget to catch Chris McEwen on Golf Origin Stories,
where I have a feeling some Chicago house music will be turning up soon, one way or another. You can find Keith again at rehebgolfdesign.com. Or at Keith Reb on Twitter and Instagram. Highly suggest you do that. You know, when Keith was growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska, he wasn't dreaming of a brilliant career designing and building golf courses and inspiring us all. But once that chance came along, he was all in on that dream. We hope you can find yours too. Go chase it. So long.